You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the third podcast on melanoma hosted by Med Learning Group, titled Updating Best Practices for Management of Advanced Melanoma, Considering Current and Emerging Anti-LAG-3 Combinations in the Veterans Affairs Setting. In this episode, we'll discuss immune-related adverse events and how to mitigate them. Joining me again is Dr. Adil Daud, Professor of Medicine and Dermatology, and Director of the Melanoma Program at the University of California, San Francisco. Welcome again, Dr. Daud.
It's great to be with you.
Can you start by providing a brief overview of what immune-related adverse events, or IRAEs, are, and why they occur in patients receiving immunotherapy for melanoma?
So if you think about how immunotherapy works, you're basically taking breaks off T cells, or in some cases, pressing on the gas pedal with T cells. And remember that the job of the immune system is not necessarily only to kill cancer, but it's also to surveil for the presence of pathogens, of anything abnormal going on with our bodies. And so when you take the breaks off T cells, of course, in some cases, they kill cancer and they attack tumor, and that's how the treatment works. But in some cases, you'll have T cells that are sensitized to our self antigens. It could be the liver, it could be the pancreas, it could be endocrine organs, it could be the lungs, it could be skin. And they're currently exhausted, to use a certain term. But once you take their breaks off, they get reactivated, and then we'll start attacking host tissues, our tissues, and will cause problems like skin inflammation, will cause liver inflammation, in some cases pancreas, or either exocrine pancreas or endocrine pancreas, thyroid, adrenal insufficiency. The gut is a big site where T cells can get activated and then basically cause colitis or gastritis, or some cases small bowel inflammation. So what we see with these immune-related adverse events, or IRAEs, is that they're very different from the side effects that we are used to seeing with chemotherapy, where you basically see bone marrow suppression, neutropenia, hair loss, nausea, or target therapy, where you might see, nausea, you might see skin rashes, you might see acneiform eruptions, in some cases fatigue, hand-foot syndrome. Over the last 10 years, we've been, increasingly aware of the presence of these unique immune-related adverse events that in many cases resemble autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or, psoriasis, those types of diseases where you have an overactive immune system.
How do you balance the potential benefits of immunotherapy with the risks of developing IRAs?
I think it's a very difficult question, and it's unique to each patient. I think one strategy is to monitor patients carefully. I think the other strategy is to try and give people a combination checkpoint inhibitor, let's just say, where you think there's the least potential for serious adverse events. And especially what to my mind is the most important is serious adverse events that are irreversible. And that is a small percentage of all adverse events, but there are things like type 1 diabetes, irreversible neurologic syndromes, in some cases, including things like Guillain-Barré syndrome, or autoimmune demyelinating neuropathy, or chronic immune demyelinating neuropathies, which can to some extent be treated by immune suppression, but they're not completely reversible in some cases. And then I also include things like cardiomyopathies and cardiac complications, and things like autoimmune or type 1 diabetes, which again, you can take insulin, you could take treatment for it, but it's something that you're going to be dealing with the rest of your life. You're going to have to watch your diet. You're going to be having to watch your sugar levels when you exercise. So those are those are serious things to consider when you're giving somebody immune therapy. And I say, you know, careful monitoring and checking labs such as thyroid hormone and taking being aware of these immune adverse events when somebody's sugar is high, and looking to see whether you might have caused an immune-related adverse event is important.
So Dr. Dowd, could you go into some more detail about some of the IRAs associated with immunotherapy?
Sure. I think one frequent class of immune-related adverse event is endocrine IRAs. And if you think about the endocrine glands that are involved, the most common is the thyroid. You can see hypothyroidism or reduced thyroid hormone secretion, but oftentimes you can see that the hypothyroidism is preceded by hyperthyroidism, and there's a Hashimoto's disease-like syndrome where you have some transient hyperthyroidism, and then longer term you have hypothyroidism. You can see something called adrenal insufficiency that is secondary to hypopituitarism, and that is often seen in combinations with CTLA-4 and PD-1, but also you're seeing some increase in that side effect in patients who have LAG-3 and PD-1 combinations, and sometimes even seen with PD-1 monotherapy. So that's one other immune-related adverse event to be aware of. And then third, rare but serious if it occurs, is type 1 diabetes, where there's immune attack on the endocrine pancreas, and there's reduced production of insulin. And you could see that sometimes months after you start treatment, like sometimes 6 months later, sometimes even later. And you could see a sudden increase in sugar, in blood sugar, that's something to be aware of. So endocrine adverse events are one class. The other class are gastrointestinal, and you could see elevated liver function tests. You could see colitis. Those are more frequent. You can also see gastritis, and you could see sometimes malabsorption syndromes. The most common are colitis, which is seen again with ipilimumab containing regimens. Hepatitis, autoimmune hepatitis, also seen more commonly with combination regimens, and then less frequently the gastritis. So all of these generally happen within the first few weeks of starting. So in addition to the gastrointestinal and endocrine, you can also see skin side effects. And in melanoma, we can see vitiligo, which is basically a deep pigmentation of the skin and has been associated, interestingly, with good outcome overall. So patients with vitiligo who are on immune therapy often have really good outcomes eventually, and people think that it might be because you have like persistent resident memory T cells in the skin, and then those resident memory T cells are also involved in fighting the tumor. So in addition to these, you can also see some other rheumatologic syndromes, and you could see inflammation of small joints. Sometimes you can see inflammation of small and large joints, similar to rheumatoid arthritis or some other types of rheumatologic diseases. And then again, in the rare but serious category is neurologic side effects and cardiac side effects. I'd say they happen about 1-2% in most trials, but these are serious because they're not always reversible and can lead to serious morbidity or even death in some cases. And I think it's important to investigate them as soon as possible if you're noting some symptoms. Like for example, I have had patients who started complaining of some difficulty feeling the floor. And I think if that happens, those types of even sensory neuropathies need to be taken seriously in patients on immune therapy, versus if you had a patient on chemotherapy who was complaining of a sensory neuropathy, you might think that it's a low grade kind of symptom, maybe not not serious enough to stop treatment. But in an immunotherapy patient, I think that patient needs to be referred for neurologic evaluation. And similarly, if you see cardiac complaints, whether it's an increase in troponin or whether it's a change in the EKG, those are much more serious with immune therapy because they might be a harbinger of cardiac pump failure or reduced ejection fraction, and can result in a pretty serious outcome.
How do you monitor for the onset of IRAs?
I think an important thing is to just to be aware of them and to talk to patients and say, hey, you know, if you notice any kind of sensory symptoms, if you notice shortness of breath, if you notice a new skin rash, if you notice a, you know, change in your bowel habits, or if you notice, you know, nausea, stomach inflammation, any of these things, let me know as soon as possible. And I think that's one way. The second way is to get some of these baseline evaluations like EKGs, blood tests, labs, endocrine. Like at our center, we do check for thyroid labs routinely and things like lipase and amylase, which are which can tell you if you have pancreas inflammation, pancreatitis.
What are the critical points that should be considered when approaching the management of IRAs?
I think the important thing is early detection, because some of these IRAs are not reversible, or they're a lot easier to treat early than later. So like if somebody starts off with having, say, 1 to 2 bowel movements a day baseline, and then goes up to 3 and then 5 and then 7 and 10, you probably should stop treatment when they increase their frequency of bowel movements, rather than waiting until it's serious colitis with blood and mucus and, you know, abdominal pain. And then to me, that's been the big learning. I think back in 2015 and 2016, we often didn't make modifications when somebody was having early stage colitis. We often waited too long, and then it takes a lot of immune suppression to get people's colitis to reverse. Now we often stop early, and that's why you're seeing that the frequency of high grade adverse events is reducing, even in patients who are on ipi/nivo and patients who are on PD-1 monotherapy. We're not seeing the high grade adverse events, which I think is just reflective of all the learning that we've had over the last 10 years.
How do you work with your patients to educate them about the risks of IRAs?
I think it's important to go through the IRAs each time you have a visit with patients. And I do personally feel that it is important to see people in person. I know during COVID, many of us moved to, seeing patients remotely and getting labs checked remotely. And that is definitely convenient for patients. But I do think it is safer to see patients and talk to them and examine them and, you know, see if there's any skin rash or joint swelling or colitis or abdominal pain, abdominal discomfort, or signs or symptoms of adrenal insufficiency, which sometimes are hard to tell. You can have a low blood pressure initially and a headache. That could be the biggest sign of hypophysitis relating to adrenal insufficiency. Or with thyroid dysfunction, you know, sometimes people are sensitive to cold. That's not something that is easily, you know, you really do have to question people to note that they're wearing a lot of sweaters and stuff like that when their, you know, house temperature hasn't changed.
What are the IRAs that would cause you to cease immunotherapy?
Generally, any grade 3 or 4 autoimmune adverse event would make me cease immunotherapy. So, for example, if somebody were to have grade 3 colitis or any kind of grade 3 adverse events, I would stop. But there are some instances where you might want to stop when it's only grade 1 or 2. And let me give you some examples of grade 1 or 2 adverse events where, you know, I have stopped immunotherapy. And those are neurologic, cardiac, and pulmonary. So if somebody starts complaining of even a sensory neuropathy in their feet, I've stopped to investigate. And especially if you have a grade one motor neuropathy, so like if somebody says they're having some weakness, like I had a patient who told me that he was an older gentleman, and he told me that he had a walk-up apartment, and he said he was having a hard time getting to the upper floor. His bedroom was on the top floor, and previously he would just kind of like bound up the stairs. Now he was having to hold the railings to get up, and we investigated and found that he was having a myopathy. So I think for neurologic, cardiac, pulmonary, somebody complains of shortness of breath, even if it's just an occasional mild shortness of breath, I would stop and investigate, maybe get a CT scan of the chest, get an echocardiogram, make sure that somebody doesn't have pneumonitis, even a grade one pneumonitis, meaning that it's just seen on the scans and not resulting in reduced oxygen saturation, I think would be a cause for concern and stop, in my opinion, reason to stop, not to continue.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Dowd. Is there anything else you'd like to add as our program comes to a close?
I think the one thing I would say is that what I've learned is that I think, with regards to IREs, is that it isn't as important with immunotherapy to get your treatment on time as we used to think before with chemotherapy. So you might think that by spacing out your treatments, you might be losing some of the effectiveness. As far as we can tell today with immunotherapy, you don't really lose effectiveness by spacing them out. And part of it has to do with the long half-life of antibodies like the LAG-3 antibodies and PD-1 antibodies and CTLA-4 antibodies. So I don't think there's a huge downside to investigating an IRE where you're not sure and then just spending an extra week or two and then restarting the patient back again.
Well, thanks again, Dr. Dowd. This wraps up the final podcast in our melanoma series. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I'd like to give a special thank you to Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, Inc., who provided an independent medical education grant for this activity. And thanks to all the learners who have joined us.